The program originally scheduled for this time will be heard immediately following a special broadcast from Europe. At the front with the French Army, direct from French General Headquarters on the Western Front, we present a report by Victor Lusanki, Mutual's American Observer with the French Army. Since France is at war, naturally a censorship prevails. We take you now to France.
Good evening, America. I am talking directly from the general headquarters of the French armies somewhere in France. Rain, a merciless driving rain, which blinds and chills, has been pouring almost without interruption during the past few days. The overladen sky has kept the air forces on the ground, while the fields of eastern France have been transformed into miles of clinging mud, which wraps around your boots like the tentacles of an octopus and all but tears them from your feet. With such conditions prevailing, activity has been of a forcibly limited character, and it can truly be said that all's quiet on the Western Front. Even the harsh voices of the cannons which stud the Franco-German frontier from Luxembourg to Switzerland have been hushed, and the exchange of artillery fire, except for brief intervals, has been rare. The one new development since last week was the employing of smoke shells by the Germans. They were used on an advanced French outpost in an attempt to assist a raiding party whose mission it was to take prisoners. The smoke shells were to blind the flanking French outposts and make it impossible for them to protect the threatened point with the crossfire of their machine guns. However, the strategy proved to be a boomerang, for the smoke also made it impossible for the raiders to see their quarry, and they were driven off with hand grenades. With the scouting planes obliged to keep to the ground for the most part because of poor visibility, the work of attempting to penetrate the secrets of the enemy is being carried on by the infantry in the front lines and outposts. Patrols are being sent out nightly all along the front into a no-man's land, which varies from several hundred yards to 2 and 3 miles. Oftentimes, a patrol from one side comes nose-to-nose with an enemy scouting group, and a murderous hand grenade skirmish ensues. Though a patrol may put to rout an overwhelming enemy force found to be prowling about in no man's land, the mission is not considered to have been successfully carried out unless prisoners are taken. The capturing of prisoners means extra days of leave to the men who take part in the action, precious days which can be added to their regular leave, or, if preferred, taken earlier. But even the bodies of enemy dead are brought back if possible, for skilled intelligence officers are able to deduce valuable information from the uniforms and papers found on them, as well as from their age. Letters from home may reveal the state of morale behind the German lines, while their uniforms and age usually permit the officers of the 2nd Bureau, whose activities have been glorified by many a novel, to ascertain whether the forces opposite are reservists or regular troops, knowledge which is of the greatest importance to the High Command, for the presence of crack regular troops in the sector can be an indication that an attack is in the offing. No bit of information, however small or apparently unimportant, is overlooked by the intelligence officers, who weigh and sift it, then check and recheck with a patience and thoroughness engendered by the realization that on their accuracy the lives of thousands of men may depend. It is this information which permits the 2nd Bureau to draw up maps of the enemy positions with the numbers of the troops holding them and the names of their commanders, maps such as I saw posted on the wall at the headquarters of one of the French armies in a little village in Lorraine. The uniforms of prisoners are even chemically analyzed to determine their quality. I learned in this connection that if the smartly dressed women of Berlin are wearing ersatz materials, as it is reported, the Germans in the front line trenches are still clothed in pure wool. The analysis of prisoners' uniforms proved this. An explanation for the reluctance shown by the Germans to engage in large operations in the West was given to me last night by a colonel commanding troops holding a part of the Lorraine front. His post of command was located in a small hamlet, a mile and a half behind the outpost facing No Man's Land. Though it was only 4:30 in the afternoon when I arrived, it was already pitch dark. Because of the proximity of the front, the army car in which I was riding was obliged to creep along at a snail's pace without a light showing so as not to awake the attention of enemy artillery. The occasional brief flashes of a pocket lamp would warn us just in time to prevent running into the men marching up to the front lines or returning for a welcome rest. Not a light was to be seen in the hamlet, and only the voices of men breaking into song here and there indicated that there was life. In the parlor of a peasant home, the colonel was seated at a table covered with maps. Short and powerfully built, it was hard to believe that he had served through the entire 4 years of the last war. His explanation for the German tactics was that the Reich High Command wishes to accustom its troops to the conditions prevailing on the Western Front. The action which the German troops saw in Poland has not prepared them, the colonel said, to the type of warfare with which they are now faced. There must be a period of adaptation during which the infantry is acquainted with trenches and with the particularly delicate work of patrols and raiding parties. It is when this period of training, as it were, is terminated that wide-scale action can be expected. The colonel went on to describe the terrific nervous strain undergone by the men who spend the night in the outposts. Imaginations run rampant when for hours on end, men are concentrating their attention in an attempt to pierce the secrets of the jet-black darkness. More than one inexistent enemy patrol has been fired upon. The rustling of the leaves, a falling branch, is taken for the stealthy approach of a raiding party, and machine gun fire suddenly shatters the stillness of the night. An enemy machine gun answers, and soon the artillery joins the chorus, and then the entire sector springs to life because one man was nervous. That is why, the colonel explained, time must be taken to accustom the men to their tasks. In the meantime, the humdrum work behind the front goes on unabated. In fact, it has been spurred on by the approach of winter. A motor drive along the rolling moraine countryside revealed that more and more lines of secondary defenses are being laid out so that even should the Germans succeed in breaking through the Maginot chain of underground fortresses at certain points, they will still be confronted with the thankless task of attempting to storm solidly entrenched positions. Concrete mixing machines, rolls and rolls of barbed wire, and telephone wire as well, are to be seen all along the roads, while tanks clatter about doing the work of tractors. Men who only a few months ago were perhaps behind the counters of department stores, or like one private with whom I talked, were employed by leading Parisian dressmaking shops, are now busy all day long at the more manual job of swinging picks and shovels. The matter of fact way in which they have taken to their new lives speaks highly of their morale. Deep lines of trenches run in all directions with their accompanying mazes of barbed wire entanglements. Anti-tank rails are being embedded in the ground, and anti-tank ditches and traps lined with concrete in order to prevent cave-ins, are being dug. Pillboxes and blockhouses have grown like mushrooms after a shower. Telephone lines, buried deep in the ground wherever overhead wires might be cut by the fire of enemy artillery, link them with the rear. Certain regions of the Lorraine countryside are also being prepared so that water barriers similar to those in Holland, though on a much smaller scale, of course, may be brought into play. Many a soldier who only a few months ago did not know the use of a trowel is today an amateur mason engaged in putting up stone walls around the big ponds to be found here and there so as to raise the water level. Should the need arise, large areas may be flooded at an instant's notice in front of defensive positions which cover them with the fire of automatic guns. Another type of work is being pushed ahead at full speed, and that is the preparing of winter quarters. The small villages in the danger zone, where the civilians were evacuated to the last man, and which have been taken over by the army from one end of the usually unique and winding street to the other, do not provide sufficient lodgings for the winter. The troops billeted in the villages are kept busy building the necessary additional living quarters and providing them with at least a minimum of comfort. The possibility of air raids is not forgotten, and an important part of the work now being done consists in excavating and fortifying deep trenches and dugouts in the open spaces in and surrounding the villages. The officers are proud of the care with which the troops give to the homes which the peasants were obliged to abandon. The soldiers who came up from the front lines for a breathing spell seemed to take special pleasure in keeping them just as they found them. I wondered as I watched a soldier with a 3-week-old beard carefully weeding the flower patch in front of the house which was his billet, if he was not dreaming of his own flower garden in some faraway corner of France. But I did not have the courage to ask him. Perhaps he, too, was thinking of the heartaches being borne by the peasants who were suddenly transplanted to a strange land without even time to bring in their plows. Thank you and good night.
Direct from the French General Headquarters on the Western Front, we have presented a report by Victor Lusenki, Mutual's American Observer with the French Army. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.